Nelson Mandela was arrested in 1962, just as South Africa's apartheid regime intensified its brutal campaign against political opponents. Mandela, a 44-year-old lawyer and African National Congress activist, had no idea that he would spend the next 27 years in prison, much of that time in isolation on Robben Island. Over the course of those 10,052 days, the future leader of South Africa wrote letters to prison authorities, fellow activists, government officials, and most memorably to his wife Winnie and their five children. Now there's a new collection of 255 letters edited by Sam Venter, a senior researcher at the Nelson Mandela Foundation, with a foreword written by Mandela's granddaughter, Zamaswazi Dlamini Mandela. Many of the letters have never been published, and they provide insight into how Mandela maintained his inner spirits while living in isolated, deplorable conditions. The Prison Letters of Nelson Mandela is published by LiveWrite, and I'm happy to welcome Sam Venter and Zamaswazi Dlamini Mandela to our show today. Hi. Hi to you both.
Hi.
Welcome. This Wednesday, Nelson Mandela would have been 100 years old. Former President Barack Obama gave a speech honoring the former South African president on Tuesday, and we have a clip of that speech here that I thought we'd begin by listening to, just a few seconds of it.
At the outset, his struggle was particular to this place, to his homeland, a fight to end apartheid, a fight to ensure lasting political and social and economic equality for its disenfranchised non-white citizens. But through his sacrifice and unwavering leadership, and perhaps most of all, through his moral example, Mandela and the movement he led would come to signify something larger. He came to embody the universal aspirations of dispossessed people all around the world, their hopes for a better life, the possibility of a moral transformation in the conduct of human affairs.
What did you think of that speech, Zamaswazi? Do you think Obama accurately portrayed your grandfather's legacy to both South Africa and to the world?
Thank you, Matt. Yes, absolutely, I think so. I believe that Obama's very much a person who admired my grandfather and what he stood for, as many people do, and as I believe we all do. And I think we all look to his values and his principles of how he led his life and how he was able to obtain our democracy. It was by his example and how he was a consistent person and how he fought for what he believed in, and he stood for what he believed in, and continuously held the beacon for the disenfranchised, as mentioned by former President Barack Obama. So absolutely, I think all those sentiments, and I think in the book, you get to really kind of understand the man on Robben Island and who he was then and who he was when he came out, which for me essentially is the same person. He was a very consistent person. He didn't change in prison and become somebody else. I don't believe that. I believe that he was who he was in prison. He matured over time, as we all do. But I think to the core of his being, he was an exemplary human being.
And these letters, they feel current, even though they were written 50 years ago, in terms of some of the issues that he's obviously grappling with. Obama, in the speech, warned of strongman politics and returning to the politics of fear and resentment and retrenchment. Do you think this book serves as a reminder of how we could go back to that place? Do you think it has a currency to it?
It's almost like my grandfather had the ability to look into the future and wrote about universal issues that we deal with today and addressing those today. I think essentially we should address whatever's happening in the world now or in our lives and what we see around now, using some of those qualities and values that my grandfather stood on and achieved what he did and lived his life in such an exemplary manner. So I think we can all look to his writings, and we can experience what that is like for a human being who is in a very violent, brutal system, but still has the ability to have hope.
Yes, the optimism that
Absolutely.
Shines through in each of these letters is just remarkable. It's jaw-dropping.
Absolutely.
Sam, how much time did you spend? Tell me about the process of collecting these letters. It's an extraordinary collection. How much time did it take? Where did you find them? Many of them have never been seen before, even by his own family.
Yeah, Matt, it's been a long process. It started in 2009, where I was assigned to go to the National Archives in our capital, Pretoria, which housed then all of his prison record in some 76 boxes. I was asked with his blessing to go to the National Archive and look through and copy his personal letters to and from. I was captivated by some of the official letters, though, so I copied some of those too. And so the years after that were a process of classifying, arranging, sorting out, and then transcribing. And then it was about late 2015 when I was asked by our publisher friends in New Zealand, Jeff Blackwell and Ruth Hobday, to edit a book, a collection of letters, and that's what I did.
Is there a particular letter that you found that just floored you as you were looking through these archives, or a particular letter that really stands out to you?
Well, there's so many, mm-hmm. really, and about so many aspects of his life in prison. But, I mean, one that I always remember is in 1986, he was in Polsmore Prison, the third of the four prisons he was held in, and he was writing to a family friend at a time when South Africa was in a state of emergency and a virtual civil war. And he was saying, you know, if I had to look back on my time, the time in prison and my whole life, I would do everything in exactly the same way.
Wow.
Yeah, I found that remarkable.
So, Mswazi, how long had your grandfather, Nelson Mandela, been in prison by the time you were born?
I'm terrible at math. So
he was in prison when you were he was in prison when you were born. And well, tell me when you first were able to meet him.
I think I first met him when I was a baby. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we weren't living in the country at the time, so we only were able to actually visit him when we would come on holiday back. We were actually living in the U.S. at the time, mm-hmm. for some of it. And so when I was a bit older and we would get a chance to go home, we would go to Robben Island and we would visit him. But I have more memories of when he actually left Robben Island and went to Victor Verster. And us being able to spend time with him, you know, in a home setting, I'll never forget that, because, you know, for all my life, I'd heard of my grandfather behind bars,
right,
and not being able to have access to him and not being able to have any kind of interaction or relationship. Or if it was very limited. But more so, I think, for my mom and my aunt and my uncles, you know, because they were his children and they didn't, for all their lives, pretty much have access to their father only through these letters. This was how they were able to actually keep a relationship going, as limited as it was. That's the only thing that they had between them, as a family, between him and my grandmother, between him and my mom and my aunts and my uncles, my late uncles. And so it really was, I think, a very profound experience for me to be able to go through some of this material, because it kind of really gave me more depth and insight into him and how he suffered. But more so, I always say my mom and my aunts and my uncles, I think, were the victims of apartheid because of the fact that it tore their family apart.
What did you learn going through the letters? Obviously, you understood to some degree their experience. I mean, you lived it. But what did you learn more deeply about in terms of what they dealt with, what your Aunt Zinzi went through as a child by looking at those letters?
I learned their suffering and the extent of their suffering, the extent of my grandmother's suffering, and the brutality of the system and how it was so systematic in ensuring that even as a family, they were not able to have any kind of sort of relationship, because the letters was all they really had and very limited visitation rights. I think my aunt was only able to see him when she turned 16, you know, sort of for the first time. And so imagine that, going 16 years of your life and not being able to have any sort of access to your father. So I think it a lot of it was very difficult for me to get through. There's a particular letter that I can't even get through because it's just too emotional for me, when my grandmother's also in solitary confinement and my grandfather's writing to my aunt and my mom because essentially they're orphans.
Yes.
With no one to look after them, and he doesn't know when my grandmother's going to come out of prison.
Right.
And he's trying to parent both my mom and my aunt the best way that he can, and it's through these letters.
You said that he that's exactly what you wrote, that he tried to parent but he couldn't. How did he try though? How did he try? Did he try to impart advice? Did he try to, what did he do? What
well,
did
it's
he say
all
to
of the above. I mean, it's giving advice, it's giving support, it's trying to provide for them financially, it's trying to keep the family together. So, some of them didn't, all the siblings didn't live together. So it's ensuring that they also have some types of relationship with each other. Are they checking on each other? How is school going? Education was a very big thing for my grandfather, and he's consistently throughout the book always asking them, what's happening with school? How are your grades? What are you studying? I'd like to advise you to study this instead of that. So he was being a parent like any parent would be, and concerned about your child's well-being and your children's well-being, and my grandmother's well-being, and also just trying to give her the support because financially it was very difficult for her to look after herself and then her children.
Right.
So he writes to people for them to assist her to be able to have some form of just financial support. So I think it's just a role that a parent would play. But obviously, this is in a different situation because, you know, he's on Robben Island. And the other thing, I think Sam speaks to this very well, is how the letters, some of them don't even reach their intended recipient.
Yeah. How did you find, Sam, how did you find a letter that didn't get to the recipient?
Well, you know, the prisons department photocopied most of the letters, but when I was looking through, for an example, through the files, I found a little letter folded up neatly and in an envelope still. And it was to Swati's aunt Zinzi, written in 1979. It was a long letter, beautiful letter, just about what life used to be like for him. How they used to be at home, and it was wonderful, and he was an amateur boxer, and the different men that he mentioned that he boxed again, and the son who went to boxing with him. And this letter was just never ever sent quite clearly because it was an original. And with it came a very short note by a prison guard saying, the prisoner, not even his name, does not have the right to send this letter, a letter with a Christmas card. Now, Zinzi's birthday is in December, so he was writing to her in 1979. It would have been her 19th birthday, to just add something extra with the Christmas card, and he wasn't allowed to. So I made a copy and I gave it to her some 30 years later.
There were all kinds of restrictions on letters, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of how many he could send. Can you explain
In the beginning, it was one letter every 6 months of 500 words.
Wow.
That was it. And that went with one visit every 6 months of half an hour.
And were there restrictions also on the letters he could receive as well?
Yeah, they were both censored. He would sometimes get them and they were cut to ribbons or they had sort of marks through them. But it later on improved slowly.
While in prison, his mother died, and then a year later, his eldest son died in a car accident. He wrote to his wife, Winnie, after a visit from Thoko Mandela, his son Thembi's widow, "The feeling of anguish and depression that had hit me so viciously when I received the horrible news of his death returned and began to gnaw away mercilessly at my insides." Was that just, for you to read that, Zamaswazi, was that just so emotional and difficult to get through some of those passages?
I would say the majority of the letters in the book, other than the ones where he's being funny, because he's actually very funny,
yes,
and he's got a great sense of humor, and it comes across so explicitly in the book. I mean, I would sit and I would actually just laugh out loud. But yes, the majority of them, because essentially, you know, this is my family that he's referring to. These are my uncles that I also never got to meet. I have cousins who are deeply impacted by the loss of their dad. And I mean, I think, you know, whenever we would go to Kunu in the Eastern Cape, my grandfather would always ensure he'd go and visit his mother's grave, because that's something that was taken away from him. So I think emotional sometimes is an understatement,
sure.
But it's heart-wrenching. Like I said earlier, there's some letters that I can't actually get through without crying, no matter how many times I read them, because I still feel the pain, and the hurt will always be there. It will never really go away. We've had to cope, and we've had to move on, but we certainly don't forget the past, and we don't forget what has happened. And also just in terms of the family dynamic and what it did to my family and the dynamic of my family. But I think we've had to learn from it, and we certainly have had to take what we can take that is good and move forward.
Very good. I'm speaking with Zamaswazi Dlamini Mandela and editor Sam Venter about The Prison Letters of Nelson Mandela, published by LiveWrite. We'll be right back with more of this conversation after the news. I'm Matt Katz, and I've been speaking with Zamaswazi Dlamini Mandela, the granddaughter of Nelson Mandela, and editor Sam Venter about The Prison Letters of Nelson Mandela, published by LiveWrite. I thought we'd start with a clip we have of Zamaswazi reading one of her grandfather's letters to his daughter, Zenani, in 1971. This was recorded by Penguin Random House, South Africa, in a video for the new book, and I thought it would give us a little insight about what these letters are all about.
When I returned to South Africa in July 1962, I saw you and Zinzi twice, and this was the last time we met. In 1964, you were brought to the Supreme Court in Pretoria, and I was quite disappointed when you were not allowed to see me. I have been longing to see you ever since. You will be able to pay me a visit in 1975, when you will have turned 16, but I am growing impatient, and the coming 5 years seem longer than eternity. I have started 1971 with a real bang. Yours was the first and only letter I got from the family this year, and I read it over and over again. May this letter bring you the same joy and happiness that yours gave me. Give my love to Zinzi, Maki, Khatu, and Abazala, Andile, Vuyani, Gwaiyo, Mapelo, and of course to you and Mami. Lots of love. And plenty of kisses. Yours affectionately, Dada.
When you read that letter and then listen to it again now, do you envision your grandfather in a prison cell? Do you envision him in a certain way in your head?
I do. I envision all of them. I envision my mom, my aunt, my grandmother, my uncles. But absolutely for him, because, you know, the letters from his family and my grandmother, I think, is what really did help him get through. And just the access, just the information, just wanting to know how they were doing, and just needing to know what was happening with his children and my grandmother, I think was everything for him. And so, yes, I take myself to that place and what that must have been like for him. But certainly I think that there are many letters where, you know, he talks a lot about how he's coping and how he gets through it and how he needs to sort of, you know, remain hopeful and positive. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, there are many times when he was tormented and you know, because he was unable to actually just be there for his children. And also that months would go by without him receiving any sort of correspondence from them must have been very brutal for him, absolutely.
When he was finally released, when did you meet him? How and what was the circumstances of you finally seeing him as a free man?
So we were living in Boston, Massachusetts at the time. And my mom received a phone call from home saying that he would be released. And at first she was actually she didn't actually believe it. So she said, well, we're not going anywhere because we've heard this before. And then he doesn't get released and I'm not going to get on a plane and go home to be disappointed. I'm not going to put myself through that and certainly not my children. So we sat in Boston, my mom, my dad and I and my siblings watching it on TV. Wow. Because my mom just couldn't put herself through the heartache and the disappointment of him not actually coming out. So a few weeks after that, we were able to get on a plane and come home. And I remember driving up Vilagazi Street, which is where he returned home to when he first got out of prison. And there were just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people along the street. Mm. And coming into what was a very, very small home. I mean, it's like four-roomed house. And there's people everywhere. And, just looking for him, just trying to find him and see him until the moment where we embraced each other. But for thereafter, it was just always, always, always busy with so many people because people just couldn't believe it. And they wanted to be near him and spend time with him. So that was quite sad for us because we weren't able to experience it like everybody else at home. We had to sit on TV, but I understand my mom.
Sure.
It was too painful for her, and she had been through it so many times where she had been so disappointed, and she said, I'm not going to put myself through the disappointment once more. If it happens, then we'll go home after.
So we
waited until he came out.
The other thing that your mother dealt with was the fact that Winnie, Nelson Mandela's wife, was also arrested while he was imprisoned. There's a section here I wanted to read. When Winnie was imprisoned, Mandela wrote to his daughters, "For long you may live like orphans. My heart bleeds as I think of her sitting in some police cell far away from home, perhaps alone and without anybody to talk to and with nothing to read." How long were they essentially orphaned with both of their parents imprisoned? Was that for quite some time?
Well, in that period, my grandmother was she was in solitary confinement for 491 days, and so, I mean, Sam and I actually co-edited her journal, her prison journal of that time when she was in solitary confinement, and I think this is one of the letters that touches me the most because he's clearly desperate to send them some type of comfort in a very, traumatic encounter and experience that they're going through, and not even knowing where they are and who's looking after them and who's going to take them in. Because during that time, my grandmother always used to say it was unpopular to be a Mandela. It's only popular now, but during that time it wasn't popular and people didn't want to associate with them. And so it was also difficult to find homes in which people would take them in. And this included family members because family members didn't want to be associated themselves with a Mandela.
Wow.
So I mean, you can only imagine what that's like for him. And my grandfather was well aware of this. And now my grandmother's also now in solitary confinement for what was about plus minus 18 months.
Amazing. Sam, these letters reveal the personal side of South Africa's most famous man. Was he generally reluctant to share details of his personal life? Were you able to uncover new details in here that you wouldn't otherwise have known about?
I think so. You know, when he came out of prison, he was, anytime anyone asked him a personal question, he sidestepped it. And often he would joke with journalists and say, "You're far too young for me to tell you that." So here we have a collection of his own emotions, very personal material in his own writing, written at the time that he was incarcerated. And I remember I went to Robben Island with him 4 years after his release, mm-hmm. along with some colleagues. And when we got a chance to go with him into the cell, it was tiny, obviously, so only a few people could go in at a time. And I went through some of my recordings recently, and I was struck by the fact that at 3:30 in the afternoon, they locked the gate of the cell, and that was where he remained until like 5:30 the next morning. I mean, 3:30 is not bedtime.
Right.
And so I said to him, "What did you do every night, every day at this time?" And he said, "I read and I wrote letters." So this must have been a really important sanctuary for him to just get into his head and reach out to people. And he became extremely emotional to his wife, especially, and his children. and bared his soul to them.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have done this to anybody when he came out.
Sure. So that you're getting more honesty, or you're getting deeper in these letters than we've otherwise seen in his own words.
Absolutely.
What was it like going to prison with him, going to Robben Island with him? What year was that?
That was in 1994. It was a few months before he became president. It was amazing. What I was struck by was his complete calm, lack of bitterness. He told the story about what happened, how it was, and there was only one moment in that whole period on the island where I thought he was going to get emotional, was when he spoke about his mother, and the last time he saw her, and he said, when she turned and walked away, I knew that was the last time I would ever set eyes on her. He just had that instinct, and she died, I think it was the following year. She only saw him a couple of times in prison, but his heart and his voice just broke slightly.
Wow.
And I was in awe of this person who was carrying so much pain, but had decided, as he said, I think, to President Clinton after he came out, just to paraphrase, he said, weren't you angry that day you were released? And he said, yes, I was. But I decided that if I remained angry, they would still have me.
Yes.
So I let it go. And I think just that story is enough for all of us to learn how to be better people.
Absolutely. From the personal to the political, there's a lesson in there. Yeah. Amazing. Zamaswazi, is there a sense in South Africa that the struggle for freedom by Nelson Mandela and others did indeed lead to a more equal, just, and democratic country, that his legacy has had dramatic change in your country?
I think there's a very interesting debate that's happening now amongst, I think, the younger generation, looking to the older generation to ask whether or not my grandfather sold out too much, whether he sold out and gave up too much and negotiated too much. And I think it's a necessary debate. I think debate is healthy. And I know that my grandfather certainly would have welcomed that. He was very much about people's freedom of expression and freedom of opinion. And I think it's important in this day and time for us to question where we come from. However, I do not agree that he sold out. I do not agree that he didn't negotiate well enough. I think that given at the time, that's the best that the leadership at the time could do. And I think his point was, when he got into retirement, that, you know, politically I've done what I can do in order to deliver democracy. Economic and social needs to be left to everybody else now, to the people of the country. So I think we just need to take a deeper look at ourselves personally, as human beings, as the country. And I think our current leadership is something that needs to be certainly under scrutiny, for sure. And my grandfather would have been very much, I think, quite vocal. So I certainly think that the debate is good. I welcome it. I think it's very healthy. I will never condone or support if anybody says that he sold out. I think that, you know, given the fact that they were in prison for 30 years, I mean, yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure if most people would have been able to endure such and do what he did and what many others did, not him alone. So I think we just need to take what we can take from people like him, and build on that, because I certainly believe that there's room to build on what was given to us.
Is he viewed differently? Is his legacy viewed differently by younger generation that weren't alive when he was in prison, and those who remember his days in prison and then his freedom and ultimate rise to the presidency?
This work is so critical and so important, because I think it's easy for us to forget. And I think if we don't understand the depth of our history and what we really went through and study it and learn it, then we can blame history and we can blame the past and we can blame people from the past that you didn't do enough. Mm-hmm. What did you do, as a matter of fact? Look at us now. So I believe that this gives people such depth and such insight into what was what was sacrificed. So, and particularly younger people, I think they're the ones who need it the most. Us older generation, I think we understand, we live the history. I was there. But there are a lot of young people who would go, oh, Nelson Mandela, okay, he was just the president. But what did he really do?
Right.
So for me, I would be so happy if this reached young people and young people were able to decipher and break down and understand and unpack and question and debate it and disagree. Absolutely. Disagreement is fine. I think it's necessary in a democracy. That's what democracy is all about. So South Africa right now, I think I pray and I hope that my grandfather's his fight was not in vain, and that we can take what he gave us and we can build on it. That's my prayer.
Thank you so much. Thank you both for coming in and sharing this remarkable story. I'm Matt Katz, and I've been speaking with Zamaswazi Dlamini Mandela and editor Sam Venter about The Prison Letters of Nelson Mandela, published by LiveWrite.